Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
Time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 87 of Slamfire Radio for December 11th, 2014. I'm one of your hosts, Matthew the Warning Shot McClatchy.
Matthew.
Yeah.
This isn't how we said we were going to start the show.
How are we going to do it?
Hello!
Hello! Hello!
How are you?
I'm good. Obviously, okay. Trevor's here. This is Trevor, right? Because that's how Trevor acts normally.
Yes.
Oh, wait.
Mr. Silly himself.
No, sorry. No Trevor.
Yeah. Sorry. Week. That was really silly on my part. I apologize to the listeners.
Yeah, you should, even though I started it back when I initiated the call.
Well, good. It's all his fault. And he took credit. Not credit.
he took the blame
himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah, I'm Owen just because we missed that. So, yeah,
well, everybody kind of figured, I think. Maybe.
So.
Hopefully. And Trevor, like I said, isn't here.
Again.
Computer problems still. Can't get one computer to work and can't get something installed on another computer or something. I don't know.
Fix it for him.
Yeah. Anyway, he'll be back eventually.
I hope.
Yeah.
I want my vacation next.
Yeah. Oh, crud. Well, Trevor hasn't even, he didn't even put anything in the notes to let us know what he's been doing with guns lately, so I can't even regale you with that.
We're going to have to do a whole show just on what he's done with guns since the last time he was on.
Yeah, it'll be Trevor's month in guns, is what it'll be. And it'll be an entire 89 minutes of Trevor talking about guns and what he's done with them. And I'm sure it would be interesting. It's, you know. I guess, maybe. Depends on what he did, I guess.
Yeah, maybe.
But, oh, well. Anyway, I guess we'll kick it off with you. What did you do with guns this week?
Well, I didn't do a whole lot. Today I was in town and I went to visit a gun store that I had never been to before. It's relatively new to the Woodstock area. It's a Green Diamond, for those of you who have one of those nearby.
Don't they sell John Deere tractors and stuff?
No, they sell emeralds. Green Diamond, you know.
Emeralds?
No. I don't get it. Emeralds are green? Anyway. Okay. I'd never been in there before. So they have a pretty good selection of firearms, and they have a huge Under Armour section. They really went heavy into that. Some really nice Under Armour stuff there. And they had, you know, just the usual kind of hunting things and some interesting targets and, some interesting firearms. They had like an 870 tactical with like a nasty looking muzzle brake and a Magpul stock on it. You know, so some things that I wouldn't normally see around this area.
Right.
Well,
that's cool. It's nice to have another gun shop.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to really look at stuff close because a friend of mine came in just after I got there, poked me in the back, and we proceeded to talk for 3 hours straight.
loitering at the Green Diamond.
While loitering.
And not looking at guns.
We got some very strange looks. After about an hour, we went outside to his truck. But, it was... So I didn't get a real good chance to look around. I'm going to have to go back now and hope that nobody who knows me is there. And
yeah, so you can get a chance to actually look around.
So I can actually shop. So, yes, I won't say his name because he's paranoid about that. But
right.
You know, if you're listening, you know who you are. So that was all I did, I'm afraid.
You went to Green Diamond, sort of looked around, saw a couple guns, and visited with your friend.
Yeah, that was it. I didn't even... And the purpose I went there was going to ask if they had any 150 grain 308, and because Curry's didn't have any, and yeah, they didn't have any. I didn't even ask, actually. So that's really sad. So the whole point of me going in there, yeah.
Huh. Oh, well. Do they have restricted firearms there, too?
Not that I saw.
Oh.
I just, But yeah, I just saw non-restricted stuff. So, but they had, I actually was in the other gun store as well, and they had some revolvers and a Beretta there for handguns. So normally they just have Glocks and Smith & Wessons, but they had a couple, six inch and an eight inch Smith & Wesson. Look like 6.86.
Sure. Trevor would know. Too bad Trevor wasn't on. Trevor could tell.
Yeah, he probably could. Yeah, I think they were Smith & Wesson 6.86s with a nice, like, Hogue grip. Kind of just like, look just like Trevor's. Yeah. Well, they were, like I say, longer barreled. In 357, and they had some sort of Beretta there. And of course, their usual selections. That was kind of neat to see some different guns in there, that I hadn't seen before.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's about it. Just kind of walking around and drooling. That's all I did.
Didn't get out doing any hunting, went to the range, nothing like that. Work on the SKS some more.
No, I didn't do a thing. I've got to get that SKS done. I haven't even looked for proper tools to get that fixed up right. Let me see. No hunting. We had a big ice storm here the last couple of days, so I've pretty much just been hunkered down in the house, and our power was out for a bit. So, you know, we just kind of stuck close to home and.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if that's that for you. Yeah. I wasn't terribly busy, but I was head and shoulders busier than you were, apparently. If Trevor had been here, it would have been like a great ranking. He would have had like a whole bunch. I've got a medium and you've got like a little bit.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have been to the range a few times this week, a couple times just with the 22s, just wanted to get out and do some shooting. It was relatively warm here. It's warmed up to about zero. So, got out and was able to shoot with the gloves off for a little while, which was kind of nice. And while I was there, I played with my shotgun adapter a bit more, the 22, into the 20 gauge. And it's with practice, and now that I'm sort of figuring out the sight picture, it's becoming more and more accurate as I use it. It's just one of those trial and error things, and you just, it's kind of like shooting a bow. Like not the kind of bows Trevor and you shoot with it, with the sights and stuff, but like a traditional bow or a recurve, where you kind of have to like instinctively shoot it a little bit. You kind of like, okay, well, I'm going to point and
form would be huge coming to exactly the same spot every time.
Every time, yeah. But with some practice, I probably put, I did it for about 10 or 15 minutes, so that's probably like 10 or 15 shots.
Yeah.
Because it's so slow. No, it was a little quicker than that. But I don't know, I probably put 100 rounds through it today. And by the end of it, I was picking off probably rabbit-sized snowballs on the berm at 25 yards. Now, that's three times the distance of the 25 feet I initially said that I could hit things with it. So I've stretched out to about 25 yards where I could probably, I wouldn't do it yet. I'd still practice some more, but with a bit more practice, I think 25 yards on the body of a rabbit, you wouldn't go for the head at all.
But, well, I have a question because this little conversion slug, for lack of a better term.
It's an adapter called an adapter.
Okay.
Or an insert.
An adapter. Insert. Yeah. Is it rifled?
Yes.
So, why don't they, I mean, I know it's convenient to have them just as long as the chamber, but why couldn't they make them a little bit longer? So let's say instead of making it 2 inches or two and three quarter inches, making it like 4 inches.
And they do. Some companies do make them longer.
I was going to say, because that would give you that much more rifling, because that's the issue with accuracy, right? Is that there's just so little rifling.
I don't know if it's the shortness of, because you can get short little snub nose pistols. And I've seen guys, who is that? I forget the guy's name. He's a hot shot. Actually, I think it was Jerry Mikulik, wasn't it? He shot a snub nose revolver and popped a balloon at like 100 yards or 200 yards or something like that.
Okay.
It might have been even further. So I don't think it's the shortness of the barrel that's the problem for accuracy. It's the fact that the adapter is not part of the gun. It's loose in the chamber, right? You just slide it in like a shotgun shell. And so it has the ability to move around to shift a little bit. And so you're just not going to get, you know, the exact same point of aim, point of impact every single time. You can get, and I've put O-rings on it, and the O-rings do help snug it up a little bit.
Yes, I bet.
And the snugger you can get it, the better, but.
Well, I would have thought, when you close the action, it would have kind of locked it all into place.
Yeah, I think it does. I think I've got mine set about as snug as I can get it. Any okay. snugger, and I would have a hard time getting it into the gun.
Yeah.
That's the issue there. But yeah, I think that's the biggest problem. That the longer adapter would actually play more of a role in retaining the velocity. It only comes out at about 900 feet per second, according to my chronograph. Right. So, which is still plenty fast.
Oh yeah.
So, but yeah. Anyway, it was fun, and you know, ate some time up out of the range, and had some fun with that. I also shot. Well, I shot the 795 and the Marlin 70 as well, just for fun because I love shooting those rifles. And I also shot the Squirrel's Friends Rifleman Challenge. And so if you guys don't know about that, it's Toby and Sticks over on the Armed Squirrels Project. And what they do is every month they put up a new target and you take it to the range and you follow the rules that are listed on the sheet of paper on the target. So it's the honor system. You have to make sure you don't cheat. Well, I mean, you can cheat if you want, I guess, but you're only cheating yourself. But anyway, you follow the rules, you shoot the target, and then you take a picture of it and post it up on their Facebook wall. And whoever has the highest score each month wins a prize. And I won 2 months ago, I think. And so anyway, I go out every month and shoot my target because it's fun. And this month, up until now, it's all been rifle challenges. And this month, it was their first pistol challenge. And so at 7 yards, there was a Christmas tree. And the Christmas tree had 9 ornaments on it, and then 8 ornaments, and then a star at the top. And the rule was 7 yards, 45 seconds, shoot each ornament once, and shoot the star twice. And 2 of the ornaments were kind of like hostage targets. They're like half behind the tree. So you had to, they were like half the size. You had to be really good at hitting those ones. But it was a lot of fun. I shot it probably 5 or 6 times before I got a decent target. And by decent, my best score was 6. So just to give you an idea of the challenge that it actually produced. The ornaments were not very big. I mean, they're big. They're not that big, though. You're probably talking
not at 7 yards.
Half. I think they were maybe half an inch. So you're trying to hit a half or 3/4 inch dot at 7 yards 10 times in a row, basically, is what you had to do. And I get it 6 times in a row. Well, 6 times in my target. It was hard. I tried it with both my 22 and with my Glock. The Glock was absolutely abysmal. I got two of them. It was my best score with the Glock. It was terrible. I don't know what it was, whether, I haven't been shooting the Glock since the Ipsic season was over, basically. So it's been a few months. So maybe just rusty out of practice, but I've never been really good at shooting accurately on paper, just standing still.
Me either.
I've always been, in Ipsic, you get to run around and there's no time wasted. It's point and shoot. Really. I mean, yes, you're aiming, but you're not taking your time. You're not taking a breath. You're not squeezing the trigger in increments and waiting for it to break. And, you know, it's a very fast paced sport. And I seem to do fairly well at that. I mean, I have a lot of fun doing it and I don't terribly suck at it. So,
but you don't have to hit half inch dots.
That's it. You don't have to sit there. It's not bullseye competition. It's not PCP. Right. It's very, you know, big targets and fast moving.
Yeah. You got to hit an, you know, 10x6 or 8x4 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
An Ipsic target. Yeah.
With my rifles, I mean, my entire shooting career with rifles has been shooting for smallest groups, shooting for accuracy. And so with my rifles, I can, you know, shoot a fly off a horse's butt at, well, 7 yards probably. but, you know, with my pistols, I've just never developed that skill. I've never honed that skill. It's always been action shooting. And so I found this challenge quite challenging. But it was fun, and I wasn't terribly happy with my score. I think I could have done way better than 6. So when I got home, I just ran out of targets while I was out there. I didn't have any more. So when I got home, I'm like, well, I'd like to shoot it some more, but the range is, you know, 45 minutes away. So I printed off a bunch more and set up a 7-yard range in the house and shot it with my pellet gun instead. Because I've got a pellet pistol, a Crossman 1322, which is a 22 caliber pump action single shot pellet gun. And so I shot it probably 3 times. I think it was my 3rd attempt on it. And I, my first attempt, all of my shots were about 2 inches high. So I actually had to do a bit of gunsmithing and, modify the rear sight. I had to take it out to the workshop and actually grind it down quite a bit in order to get it to hit where it was supposed to be hitting. I didn't realize how off it was. I think it was my 3rd attempt. I managed to hit 8 out of the 10. So,
well, you know what I'm going to have to do now? I'm going to have to print off one of these targets and shoot with the airsoft.
I didn't even consider using the airsoft. That would have been, I should have done that just for fun.
Yeah. I figured
at least the pellet gun might count for half score, maybe, because it's not a real gun, but airsoft, I think, is at least going to be quarter score, if that.
Yeah. I really wanted to shoot this one just because it was pistol, and I tried shooting one of the previous ones, and I could not get the accuracy out of my gun with the ammo, just because I've never, unlike you, I've never shot like that to try, you know, that kind of precision with my 22s, mm-hmm. with any gun for that matter. And so, I've never really participated in any of their other little challenges. And I just never seemed to have time. But the pistol one, I thought, you know what? My 22 pistol is dead accurate. It's really, really accurate with the ammo I use. And I thought, you know,
well, you've still got time. I mean, it's still the end of the month.
Yeah,
right?
But my pistol's broken.
Oh, well, there's
so that's why I haven't done it.
Well, fix your gun and go out and shoot.
So maybe next week. Well, you're thinking of coming down this weekend, right?
I am. Yeah, I should be there on Saturday.
So maybe we'll tear that gun apart.
Sure, fix it and take it out and shoot the challenge.
Yeah, that might
I'd like another crack at it with my 22 pistol because, like I said, I'm sure I can do better. It just did not line up today for me.
It's not easy. And 7 yards, I mean, sounds really close, but with a pistol, trying to shoot something that small.
Yeah, it's 21 feet. I mean, it's a fair distance for shooting, you know, that small of a target with a handgun. And I find that I get like anxious. I get anxiety whenever, like, I brought out a practice target and it was just bullseyes, and the bullseyes, they were a half inch bullseye. And I was able to hit them fairly regularly with the 22. I was hitting them pretty good, and that's why I switched over. And as soon as I put up the actual target, mm-hmm. I started shaking and my heart started pounding. I'm like, there's like not even anybody here. I'm shooting it by myself. Like, what is going on?
And you can shoot another one if you do bad.
I know, and I just could not get that through my head. And I was just the whole time, I was just, you know, I don't know, performance anxiety or something. I don't know what it was.
Under pressure cracks. That's crazy because you're the like Mr. Cool.
Well, if I was running around, you know, shooting IPSC, I don't feel nervous doing that, but just standing still, I think it's because
you get rid of the nervous energy too when you're moving around.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. And I think it's because I know that I'm not good at this that, you know, the doubts start to creep in, right? So I think it's this mind over matter thing. And I'm sure if Trevor was here, he'd coach me and tell me exactly what I need to do, you know, but
Ice man.
Yeah. So anyway, I'll work on that and we'll see how it goes. But anyway, that's pretty much what I did for you know, with guns. I can't think of anything else that I did. So, I guess we'll move on to some upcoming events.
Great.
And I think the only upcoming events we have to mention are the same ones we mentioned last week, which is the 5th annual charity shoot. It's coming up June 20th. So you should get your ducks in a row and get your passport if you're somebody who lives down in the States and needs to come get his passport so he can come up. You know,
this could be the charity shoot of charity shoots by the sounds of it.
It could be. We got a lot of,
if all the people that say they're going to come.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty amazing.
It's a big list of podcasters.
Yeah. The who's who of podcasting.
The who's who. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, that's pretty much all we have to announce for upcoming events. I guess we'll move on to some news. And this first one and only one, it's from Rob. So Owen, if you want to read that, then we'll talk about his email after he sent it in. And I'm done talking now. It's your turn.
What do you mean? There's like shared responsibility in this?
I'll call up Trevor. Have him read it over the phone.
Yes. All right. Okay, so this comes from out of Kamloops. Kamloops, that's in BC. I always thought it was like Fruit Loops. That's
Fruit
really
Loops.
Funny. It's got a kick out of that name. But the man accused of shooting a Kamloops RCMP corporal on Wednesday before fleeing the area and sparking an intense manhunt is a convicted killer with a history of firearms-related offenses and the subject of a lifetime firearms ban.
Wow, I wonder how that worked out. How did he shoot that guy if he wasn't allowed to have a gun?
I know, I don't know. The man accused of shooting a Kamloops RCMP corporal on Wednesday before fleeing...
That's the exact same paragraph copied and pasted. I don't know why it's there. It's the exact same word for word.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, all right. So we'll just carry on.
The suspect has been charged with 4 counts, including attempted murder and aggravated assault of a peace officer in relation to the shooting that sent RCMP Corporal Jean-René Michaud to hospital in critical condition. The 36-year-old was convicted in 2009 of 3 firearms charges after being found by police with a loaded restricted handgun while wearing body armor. During his trial, the gun was described in court as loaded and cocked with a bullet in the chamber.
That's kind of redundant.
Yeah, just a little.
Anyway.
Especially since, well, we don't know this, but I wonder if it was a semi.
Yeah.
The suspect was sentenced to 2 years in a federal penitentiary in order to submit a sample of his DNA to a national crime database. In addition, he was placed on a lifetime firearms prohibition. He already had a lifetime firearms ban. Interesting. He was also charged with second-degree murder in 2002, but later pleaded guilty to 1 count of criminal negligence causing death after the charge was reduced to manslaughter. The death involved a firearm. At the time, he was on probation for assaulting a police officer in 2001. Kamloops RCMP Corporal Cheryl Bush said on Friday, Michaud underwent a second surgery Thursday night at Royal Inland Hospital and remains in intensive care. Police have said Michaud was performing a traffic stop in Bachelor Heights at about 2:45 a.m. Wednesday on a white Chrysler Intrepid when an occupant of the vehicle opened fire, striking the officer.
Wow, so this does not sound like your you know,
typical duck hunter.
No, this is not a responsible law-abiding firearms owner. In fact, he'd had a lifetime ban. It clearly doesn't work. I mean, if he had had a
I just think how ironic, or maybe not ironic, but hilarious that it is that he had a lifetime ban and part of his sentence was a lifetime ban.
Yeah, so ban him twice from owning guns. Then it'll stick. Okay, guys, yeah, give me that gun. Oh, no, wait, I was banned. It's okay, give it to me anyway. I was banned twice. Oh, better not. It's magic at that point.
Yeah.
Nope, doesn't work that way. So Rob, like I said earlier, Rob sent this in, and he has comments, and Rob's comments are, he must have had a registered firearm, and he appears to be such a law-abiding citizen. Oh, wait, according to the first few lines, he had a lifetime ban. Prime example of gun control at its finest. This paragraph should be read with heavy sarcasm. Is that sarcastic enough? Seriously, though, how is this guy even on the street? I know I'm not saying anything new, but our justice system sucks. Well, first of all, Rob, I'm just going to correct you just real slightly. It's a legal system. There's no justice involved at all. You're right. It sucks. Like, when you can have a rap sheet like this guy, convicted of 3 firearms charges, convicted of assault and battery, convicted of second degree, charged with second degree murder, which means it was probably second degree murder, but then our quote unquote justice, which should actually be legal system, you know, pleading him down to manslaughter. So manslaughter means you didn't really mean to kill him. Well, second-degree murder means, yeah, you really meant to kill him. So, like, this guy intentionally killed people, and he was not in jail. I think if you ever intentionally kill somebody, you should be in jail for a very long time. Not just, you know...
Unless it was self-defense.
Well, sure, if it was self-defense, and that's fine. That's different. But, you know, if you get charged with murder is, you know... You're a threat to the public at that point, and you should not be in the public. I understand some people can be reformed, and that's great. If you're reformed and you can prove that, you know, you're no longer a threat to society, great. Come on back to society. But until then, this guy clearly didn't show that.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, because he's been charged multiple times with violent offenses, and he's still out on the streets. It's ridiculous. So, I don't know. Yeah. Thanks for sending it in, though, Rob. I haven't had my blood pressure this high in quite a while, so I needed that to kind of, you know, work out the heart and the blood vessels and all that stuff again a bit more.
I don't know what else to say about it. This is, I think, if I remember correctly, this story came out of Global News.
Okay.
Which is sort of notoriously anti-gun, which is why I think there's probably so much gun-related talk in it.
Right, yeah.
Because they're a little obsessed with trying to paint guns in as bad light as possible.
Yeah.
But
yeah, he clearly, I mean, this clearly isn't a good case for banning guns, because this guy was a criminal to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, when you're already a criminal, it doesn't matter what you do. Criminals don't follow the laws.
And yeah.
That's exactly why they should be put in jail for a very long time. Until you're ready to follow the rules of society, you shouldn't be in society. Okay, well, let's move on to our main topic. And this week, we thought we would do something that may be basic for a lot of people, but maybe something that some people haven't thought about. And so we thought maybe we would cover this. And it's how to introduce somebody new to shooting who may or may not be afraid to go. I've taken people to the range before who were very apprehensive. They were not sure if they were going to like it. They were not sure if they were scared of guns. Well, they were scared of guns. They didn't like the idea of guns, but, you know, they gathered themselves together and very bravely said, yep, let's do this and let's see how it goes. So How do you take somebody like that to the range, let them shoot a gun for the first time in their life, and have it be a positive experience?
Yes. So we're not talking about people who are maybe just not who are experienced with firearms, maybe rifles, but not handguns or something. We're talking people who are literally scared of guns, but have taken the big step, which is great, to be willing to try it.
Right. So we're going to start off with a safety briefing. You want to stress, and this is how I usually do it. Whenever I go to the range with someone new, on the way to the range, I talk about what the rules are. And I go through Jeff Cooper's basic four. Treat every gun as if it's loaded. Point the gun only, or don't point the gun at anything you're not willing to destroy. Be sure of your target and what's beyond it. And keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot. And we go over those, and I explain in detail what each of the rules means, and not only what it means, but what does it look like on the range. So, you know, you can say all you want, be sure of your target and what's beyond it, but what does that mean on the range? Well, it means that your target is made out of paper, and bullets go right through paper without even slowing down. So you have to be sure that there's nothing between you and the target, but you also have to make sure there's nothing beyond the target that you may or may not be able to see because the target's in the way. So, you know, you let them know that one of the things that you do before you shoot is you walk side to side to make sure that there's nothing directly behind the target that you're not willing to destroy. So, you know, I go through each of those rules with them and explain what they look like at the range. They know what to look for, and they know what to do when they get there.
Yep. And that's good, because when you get to the range, you're going to be throwing a lot of information at them about the actual workings of the firearm. And if you are throwing that at them at the same time, it could get missed.
Yeah, that's right. And so I find it's important to people are different. Everybody's different. Some people want to know exactly how the gun works. Some people don't care. And so you have to figure that out before too long, because you don't want to bore somebody to death with all of the ins and outs of the particular firearm.
Yep.
But at the same time, you don't want to leave it a mystery for somebody who wants to know. So give them the information they want. Encourage them to ask questions. You know, say there are no dumb questions, just ones you don't ask. So make sure that they're very, very open, and there's a good back and forth letting them know that you're open too and you're willing to explain anything they want to have explained.
Stress safety.
Yep. I go through it, like I said, on the way there. And again, when I'm there and I talk out loud, whenever I'm doing something safety related, you know, we'll do axe and prove as well. For our American listeners, the axe and prove are Canada's, their acronyms for how to properly handle firearms. Axe is ACTS, which is assume every firearm's loaded, control the muzzle. Is C. T is trigger, so keep your finger off the trigger. And S is C, that it's safe. And you see that it's safe by proving it safe. And prove is an acronym. Point the firearm in a safe direction. Remove the ammunition and any magazine. O is observe the chamber and the feed. Observe the feed path, so make sure that the magazine is actually out and that nothing is going to be on its way to the chamber. V is verify the chamber is empty, and then E is examine the bore. And during your training, whenever I took my training, they taught us to put our eye up to the barrel and look down the gun. I don't do that at the range. I never point the gun at myself. And so what I show people how to do is put a flashlight in the muzzle, and that way you can see the light on the bolt, yep. and you know that it's clear. Or use a cleaning rod, shove a cleaning rod down there, and that way you know it's clear. So those are ways that you can kind of explain to them.
And with shooters who are scared of firearms, they're usually scared because of misconceptions in, you know, movies or what they've read in the media, or just they have their own conceptions of. They think that guns are so dangerous they're just gonna could blow up at any time. And so when you show the safety and show that if you follow the safety, nobody's gonna get hurt.
That's right.
You know, and that's I think the big thing is to show them that safely used guns are very, very safe. You know, I mean I've seen people throw guns on the ground and they don't just go off and kill everybody.
guns are designed these days to be very, very safe.
That's right. This is a huge part of it for people who are scared of firearms.
Yeah. Yeah, just stress to them how safe it really is.
Yep.
As long as you don't look, think about how safe a gun is. As long as you're not exactly in front of the gun, the barrel, you're safe in every direction except for in front of it. Mm-hmm. Think about how small the direction of that bullet traveling really is. So,
yep.
you know, it really is very safe to shoot guns as long as you point them in the right direction. So,
yep. Yep.
Another thing that a lot of people are really scared of when it comes to shooting is the noise. And mm-hmm. so I try to bring both foam earplugs and earmuff, earmuffs. They're not really called earmuffs, but you know what I mean. The cup hearing protection. Just so that it really muffles the noise for them, because if they don't get that really loud bang when the gun goes off, they're not going to be nearly as scared. And I find even myself personally, whenever I'm shooting something, if I, even with my 22s and stuff, if I put earplugs in and then put earmuffs on top of that, it is so much more comfortable to shoot. And it actually feels like there's less recoil sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of people, I mean, the human body is designed to jump at loud, sharp noises. So when a gun goes off, of course you're going to jump. So the more you can muffle that sound, the better off I think the shooting's going to be for them.
Yep. And, I was going to add something to that, but I don't need to.
All right, then. Very good.
Yeah. Once you get kind of past that stage, showing them how it works, and there's a bunch of points with this, but again, scared of that it's dangerous, scared that it's loud, and there's just lack of knowledge. I mean, that's always the way it is. We're scared of what we don't know. And you show them how a gun works, and knowledge is power. And it's not so scary when all of a sudden they have power over the firearm because they know how it works.
Yeah, when they know that you actually have to pull the trigger with the safety off the mm-hmm. proper way, you know, the gun won't go off by itself. You demonstrate the different safeties that the gun may have. I even go so far with some people, because some people enjoy learning this part. I show them how the ammunition works. What are the components of the ammunition? How do you make it go off? I show them you can take a round and just drop it on the ground. It's not going to go off. You actually have to hit a specific part of the gun, of the ammo, the primer, and you have to hit it a specific way before it'll even ignite. And even mm-hmm. that goes a little ways to help calm them down a bit, to let them know that, okay, I'm not handling dynamite here. This is a safe component, and it only works properly when it's in the gun.
Yeah. I remember being out somewhere and I don't know what I had in my pocket. I think a 30-30 round for some reason. And I pulled it out and a friend was standing there. I was like, oh, look at that. A round in my pocket. Maybe it was 5.56 and he just like stumbled back away from me like I was about to explode and take everybody out. He's like, that's dangerous. I was like, what do you mean? And I tossed it on the ground in front of him and he just like was scrambling for cover.
That happened to me at Canadian Tire once. I was buying a bulk pack of 22 ammo and looked like about a 12-year-old girl was serving me. she had the ammo, and when I buy bulk ammo, I usually buy 5 or 6 boxes of it. And she had them, and so they were starting to fall, and so I went and I helped, like I was grabbing hold of them to make sure they didn't, well, we missed, and one hit the floor. She screamed and jumped. It's like she was scared that she was about to die, I think, because the ammo hit the floor, and I didn't laugh out loud at her. I just, it's okay. This is very safe. We'll just pick it up. It's fine. But yeah, I mean, people are scared of it. They think it's going to explode. So, after you show them how the gun works, I usually show them the gun actually in action. I will actually load the gun myself. I'll say, okay, so you watch and you listen and you see how this is going to go. And I will fire the gun at the target a few times. So let them get used to the noise, get them used to, you know, the, what I'm experiencing. They can watch me and they can see what I'm experiencing. They can see that when the gun goes off, I don't go flying off in the opposite direction. The gun's not going to explode. The gun is very safe.
Yep. Yep. I think that's good. And then once you do start them, so they are shooting, I think there's a few points that go together here. Start with dry fire. So let them pull the trigger and feel what it's like. Let them run the bolt or the lever or whatever the or pump, whatever the case is, and feel what that action is like.
Yep.
And that makes a big difference. They know what to expect as far as the feel. And start.
Don't worry too much about proper stance and proper grip.
No.
And Trevor's going to freak out and lose his mind and say, no, you got to teach them right from the beginning. And I agree. Yes, you do. But when they're brand new, let them get comfortable. Let them stand how they like. Maybe nudge them in the right direction with, you know, okay, maybe it would be better if you put your hand here, or maybe stand just this way a little bit and you might find it's a bit more comfortable. But in the end, let them shoot it how they're comfortable. If they're comfortable with a crazy, I see a lot of girls shoot this way. Their back's arched and the gun out in front of, especially handguns. And the reason why that is they have less mass than most guys do. And that 5 pound gun at the end of their, you know, one, yard arm long, you know, they're it's a big fulcrum, a big lever, right? And so it's trying to drive them down so that if they lean back, it balances them. It doesn't look right. It's not good for recoil, but if they're comfortable that way, let them shoot a couple of rounds that way. Let them see. And then you can say, okay, now maybe we can, for speeding up firing, we can adjust your stance a bit, but go softly at that. You don't want to scare them off by saying, you got to do it this way or else you can't do it at all.
When I'm not dealing with handguns, when dealing with rifles, which is usually what I would start people on is a 22 rifle, I'll start them sitting down.
Yep.
With a bench rest. So they don't even have to worry about the weight of the rifle or anything. It helps with recoil. It helps with their success, which we're going to talk about here in a bit. And it just makes it easier overall, for them to focus on safety and focus on, you know.
I agree. Yeah. Let them just sit down and bench it or sand.
Offhand shooting is hard enough as it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why throw that at someone who's you know, is very new?
Yep.
Yeah. I think this should go next, starting with a small caliber and working up is key.
Yeah. Yeah. Start with a 22. I mean, don't start with.
I watched the videos online. Yeah. Where they put a 500 Smith & Wesson in the hand of, you know.
And then they laugh whenever they can.
Yeah. And then they laugh.
It's not funny. I don't care. Like, it's not funny. It's rude and it's funny when
it's an other gun person who's already a gun person.
Sure. If you know, you're not going to scare them off. If it's you know, here, try this 50 Beowulf, you know, to me for the first time, it's like, okay, boom, holy crap. Yeah. That was hilarious. Yeah. You know, that's fine. But when it's a new shooter, don't scare them. That's just not the right way to do it.
No, absolutely.
And then when you do start them shooting, load them just one round. Just give them one round to begin with, especially if it's semi-auto.
Yes.
Because I've seen this happen a few times where they shoot, you know, and we usually use interactive targets. So I have either a gong or balloons or something. They'll shoot and they'll hit it and they'll go, whoa, I hit it. And they'll jump up and wave the gun around. And I tell them beforehand, you're going to be excited. Don't wave the gun around, you know, keep your head about you, but not everybody does. So give them one round to begin with. And then when they do that, you can say, ha ha, that was good. Remember about keeping the gun downrange. What if it was loaded? And then you can kind of give them a reminder on that.
Yep, absolutely. I don't worry too much about that if it's a bolt pistol or a bolt action rifle or something, just because it's not auto loading that next
round.
That's
right. They don't know how to run the bolt yet, perhaps, or whatever. Yep. But with the semi-auto, it's important.
Yep. And I guess we've kind of covered a couple of these topics with starting with rifles first.
Start with rifles first? I mean, that most people do. I usually do. If I go to the range and I'm bringing my whole gun collection with me, I start with 22 rifle first. And then, then after that, I ask them, what would you want to shoot? Because a lot of people, some people are going to the range because they really want to shoot a handgun. Some people are going to the range because they really want to shoot my AR. Some people really want to shoot the quote unquote sniper rifle, you know? So I ask them, because after the 22, really after that, it's all going to be fine. I'll give them a little bit extra coaching. If they jump straight to the 12 gauge, I'll say, okay, now we're going to talk about a little bit of recoil.
Yeah.
But aside from that, anything else they want to shoot, they're going to be fine with. Yep. So let them, yeah, let I've them taken pick what a, they want.
I've taken a bunch of people over the years to the range, you know, some of my family who are not gun people at all. And they just said, you know, I'm going to do this once in my life and go shoot some guns and, you know, have no interest in doing it, but they just want to do it to check it off their bucket list, so to speak.
Yeah.
And that I always start with 22 rifle, and I have had several 22 rifles. And so, they'll often shoot all of them. They'll shoot the bolt gun, then they'll shoot the semi. You know, I had the 10/22, or I'd put the conversion kit in the AR. And they'll shoot the AR, which they like. You know, so, and you kind of work your way up, and I let them get comfortable as they go. Yeah. Do you want to go a little bigger? This is a little more recoil, you know, it's up to 30/30 or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
and then,
just
and
let
then
them...
I go to, yeah. Yep. Yeah. Then I go to handguns just because it's the hardest for right. success.
Yeah. And that's it. And that's a really key point is make sure you have easy targets to hit. Interactive targets, big balloons, a big metal gong, something that whenever they hit it, it's going to make a noise or it's going to ring or it's going to move. They're going to see it. And, you know, don't have them shoot for groups. Have them shoot something nice and big. Keep it fun. And that's the other really big thing is keep the atmosphere light. Keep it fun. Unless it's safety related, of course. I mean, if it's safety related, you know, you can be a bit more stern, but don't ever get mad. Even if they do break a safety rule, be very polite, be very kind. Just remind them, you know, look, you got to make sure you keep the muzzle down range or, you know, whatever. Keep your finger off the trigger till you're ready to shoot. Just be gentle, be kind, be stern. Don't let them, you know, make sure they know that safety is very important, but don't ever get mad at them. I've seen father and son out at the range before, and son does something stupid and dad yells at him while son just turns red and never wants to shoot guns again.
Yeah.
Right? Because
Yeah, especially if there's other people around.
Sure. I mean, egos are something that you don't want to bruise when you're at the range. So.
Yep. And then I think lastly, keep it simple.
Yeah. Like, just have fun with it.
You don't need to give them a history lesson on a 1911.
Nope.
When they shoot before they shoot it, and you don't need to tell them all about the model and the caliber. They just need to know that it's this action of gun.
That's it. You know? They just want to just let
keep
them
keep it simple. It's an overwhelming experience as it is.
That's right.
So unless they ask, keep it simple.
All right. Well, let's move into some listener feedback then. And this first one is from Rob, and this is the same Rob that sent in our news story. And so Rob continues on, as you've probably figured out, I'm not the best email writer, but I do try to spell check, unlike some of your listeners that send in. LOL. Keep producing the great shows. Also, as I'm sure Owen loves hearing about the warrior ethos that he used to do, but I'm sure, okay, but any chance on maybe integrating some of that podcast into Slamfire? I enjoyed that podcast, and I listened to some U.S. Prepper. Not sure if that's a bad word, but it's just not the same. Maybe put in a small segment. I know you gents do talk about preparation sometimes, but it would be cool to become a regular thing. I think the hardest part would be squeezing it into the time frame. Not this week. This week we got lots of time. Pretty sure I messed up some of the punctuation. Smiley face. Not all of us are as good book learned as you, grammar police. LOL. Says, loyal listener as always, Rob HK from Vancouver. Yes, I know I'm hard on people, and I'm not perfect, as you'll hear later on in the show, because I get taken to task as I incorrectly pronounced a word last. Well, I didn't incorrectly pronounce it. I pronounced it quite right. I just used the wrong one.
Taking a task as you properly deserve.
Absolutely. I do. Look, I like to poke fun and stuff, but I'm not perfect as much as I try to be. I'm not. So, I mean, I could go on about how you didn't use any capital letters in your email at all, Rob, but I'm not going to go there. No, I'm not going to go there. We're going to move on.
Enough of that. Jeez. I think it would be cool to put a little segment maybe in most shows or shows that we do have a little extra time. It wouldn't even be 5 minutes. And if we could fit it in, that might be, you know, like the
Owen's Prepper's Corner or something. And yeah. I don't believe prepper is a bad word there, Rob.
Prepping pointer.
Prepping pointers. We need another word pointer. That prepping propositions. We need to have like
I do prefer the term modern survivalist.
Right. So
it's a better term in my,
All right. Well, I'm going to call it prepper then, just to irritate you.
Well, you can call it prepper. I call it prepping, but
right.
I think modern survivalism encapsulates the whole concept better than just prepper, because it's more than just preparing.
It's true. Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think And also prepping, you know, having the word prepper does have some negative connotations in some parts of our society. Some people look at those people as weirdos with tinfoil hats on their heads kind of thing, like, oh, you're waiting for the apocalypse, you know, and making fun of them. But I, you know, as negative as those connotations, or that may be, it's, I don't think that should stop anybody from doing it. I mean, if you think that you need to be preparing for something, prepare for something. Why would you not? It doesn't make sense to let somebody make fun of you and, you know, stop you from preparing for something that you know you need to be taken care of, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could go on and on about why you should do it. Not even from a perspective of, because these things could happen. It's more of a perspective of, why wouldn't you want to live your life in such a way that you are taking care of yourself?
Yeah.
With things that you can't control. Degree of influence and degree of concern. And there's things that we need to be concerned about that we don't necessarily have any degree of influence over.
Like the price of gas.
Like the price of gas.
We could be concerned all we want about the price of oil, but we can't do anything about it.
Yeah. Or the government that we have. Or the person driving the other car. It's a great concern to us, but it's not something when we have a great deal of influence over.
Right. But then again, there are a lot of things where they're very concerning, but we do have a degree of influence over.
Exactly.
You know, stuff like stocking up on food at your house.
Yes, that's right. Why wouldn't you take control of that which you can take control of in your life? And even if nothing bad ever happens to you, it's still just a good way to live.
Sure.
So,
yeah,
that's
Boy Scout motto, right? Be prepared.
That's right. Yep, hope for the best and be prepared for the worst.
Yep.
So, you know, that's why I like the term modern survivalist as opposed to just prepper, but I understand both.
Cool.
And prepper has become a really pop culture thing that they've put a negative connotation on it with doomsday preppers and all the, you know, they try to interview all the crazies and.
Well, yeah, and that's what they end up doing is they interview the crazies and make them all look bad when, you know, that's really the 1% of all the modern survivalists.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. So, yeah. No, anyway, I that would be cool if we could talk to Trevor, but...
There's two of us here.
That's right.
We decide.
Close favor?
I.
Contrary-minded?
Crickets.
Vote carried?
Vote carried. Motion is passed. So,
unanimously.
Maybe we'll start some prepping talk in the near future then.
I could even do it as a little separate thing and we could just cut it into the show.
We certainly could, yeah.
You know, if that was easier.
That would be an option. I think it would be better if you just kind of did it with Trevor and I here, though, because then we would be able to give our feedback right away.
Yes,
that is true. About it, as opposed to you just talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, why don't you bring this next one to us from Edith?
Great. Edith says, hi there.
Hi,
Edith. Just wanted to let Matt and Owen know that they did an excellent job on explaining the reason for using a choke on a shotgun to me. And I did understand what Matt was trying to bring across by using the garden hose example. Thanks to both of you for taking the time to explain it to me.
Woo. Edith. Vindicated. Woo-hoo. The one person that mattered. One person that mattered understood. So the rest of you...
I think she was just being nice.
Maybe she was, yeah. She probably heard me getting raked over the coals the last couple of weeks. She was, I better send something in. Quick, did I understand it? It's close enough, I guess. I'll tell him I did. It'll make him feel better. Cool.
Well, more on this in a couple emails from now. So
yes, there is more on that. It doesn't seem to end for some reason.
No, it never does.
I've gone from the warning shot to the guy who doesn't know how to explain how chokes work. All right, from Brendan, he says, "Hey guys, still love the show, but I think you need some guest hosts like myself to help spice it up." That's a great idea, Brendan. We should have you on sometime again. It has been a while. First, Trevor, green. What happened to copper when it oxidizes? Or what happens to copper when it oxidizes? So remember Trevor put a patch to his gun and it came out green? He's like, what is that? Well, why did it come out green? Well, copper oxidizes to the color of green. So there you go. Thank you, Brendan. I think a lot of us knew that and none of us clued in. And because, the Parliament buildings, their roof is made out of copper and they're all green. Like, it's...
Yep.
it's pretty common to, you know, I thought it was pretty common sense, but none of us clued in. None of us picked up on it. So thank you to Brendan for sending that in and setting us all straight. And now we know it's oxidized copper. And second, well, there is no second, but remember, if the women don't find you handsome, they should at least find you handy. And I'm Brendan Heaney. So thank you, Brendan, and thank you for getting the quote right as opposed to us getting it wrong. But whatever, that's cool. It's a week of correcting Slam Fire Radio is what it is.
Yes.
Write in all the mistakes that we've made. So basically it'll just be like email after email after email. All right, so that was from Brendan. Thank you, and on to Jason's.
All right. Jason says, Merry Christmas to the families and friends of Slam Fire Radio. First off, Matthew needs a little bit more practice hunting. If he is looking for the best place and the best time to shoot partridge, might I recommend pear trees? And about this time of year.
Yeah, I think there's a song about that.
Yes. I do believe it's best that all future shotgun-related discussions, education, learnings, and teachings be presented by Owen. Obviously, Matt has lost the plot.
Yep, gone.
If he is committed to his garden hose representation of shotguns, perhaps he should stop talking about chokes and start using it as a method to describe lead. When you try to spray someone with a garden hose and they're running across in front of you, what you see coming out of the end of the hose with your thumb over the end is what your shot pattern is similar to as it flies through the air.
Well, that's actually a pretty good analogy. That's true. Because yep. You were talking about how the spray of shot is a three-dimensional swarm, if you will. Mm-hmm. And that is sort of what you see coming out of a garden hose. So look at that. I'm right again.
Always a way to twist it.
It's one way or another. Look, I'm a master at that.
I also think at this time of year, a little from Owen about the value of preparing ahead. Boy,
there's
really
a theme going on here.
Getting on me, this week. Yeah. Homemade produce, preparation, and Christmas dinner, such as Christmas goose, would be great. Also throw a little gardening preparation in would be great. We need to start getting ready now. For Trevor, I would give him my Christmas wish list this year. I would love to have him hand deliver, if possible, wrapped under the tree, a beautiful walnut AR-10 with some nice walnut side stocks from a 1911, and perhaps, but not limited to, a little bit more walnut, 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 1911, 1911, 1911, 1911, 1911, 1911, 1911, and to all a good night. I'm not sure if I was supposed to sing that like a song or what was going on there.
Maybe it is a song. I don't know. That's awesome. I think Trevor's head just blew up. Just now, just poof. He doesn't even know why.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that, okay. Well, I will. I have some work to do for next show, I can tell.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to some of that, too. This is a good time of year to be doing that. He's right. You know, we can talk about gardening coming up and what sort of winter preparation things you can do. And, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't say gardening's coming up yet. We've got another 6 months of winter yet.
Oh, okay, that's true. But you could, like, greenhouse and stuff if you wanted inside, get it ready. But the other thing we could talk about is how to, you know, properly clean the ash out of your stove.
Inside joke there, folks. We won't go into.
All right. This next one comes to us from the Conquistador. Matt and Owen, I must again respectfully question the validity of the points you both raised in episode 86 regarding a letter from Sharp 97. Here we go.
He should be a lawyer. He's very legal sounding.
He should just come on and talk to us about this. We should see if he's on Skype and have him come on.
Yeah.
All right. You did say the 2-3 cartridge is only accurate to 600 yards. Did we say that?
No.
Because if we did, that's not what we meant, which is, of course, incorrect. That's what he's saying. Yes, it's not only accurate to 600 yards. I'm sorry that we said that. Jeez. Yes. Okay.
Matt
I
said
have
it, not
myself.
Me. I just want to clarify. Huh? Matt said it, not me.
Yeah. It was. Look, this week it's all on me. I got big shoulders. I don't really have big shoulders. That's metaphor. Or an allegory. I don't know. I don't know what an allegory is. All right. I have myself shot it accurately out to 1,000 yards with a 26-inch bolt action. By accurately, I mean I kept it on the target 6x6 target board, So 6 foot by 6 foot target board. So it was by no means maintaining a sub MOA group, but that is more to do with the shooter than the cartridge. Then I got bored with F-class shooting and sold a rifle. So, I mean, yeah, you can shoot it out to 1,000 yards. Okay. You mentioned that a bullet flies true at all distances. This is not the case. Yes, I know. I'm sorry. I didn't go into the minutia of external ballistics. But anyway, we're going to have Brian go through it now with us. When a bullet slows to the point where that it is no longer supersonic, it rapidly goes offline and will continue to travel in a rather haphazard and random fashion. That's actually not true. Sorry, Brian. I didn't read this earlier. I could have corrected you right off the bat. It goes through transonic stage, and it doesn't go rapidly offline. Well, maybe it does. I don't know. I'm not an expert. I'm not gonna say anything because he's just gonna come back and yell at me some more. So I'm just gonna read this. Alright, sorry. It can no longer be considered accurate. Again, I gotta say, I'm sorry, but I shoot 22s and 22 is only supersonic out to about 30 or 40 yards. Then it goes transonic and then subsonic. And I can still print sub MOA groups at 100 yards with bullets that have traveled through the transonic shockwave. So that's not necessarily true for all bullets. So I'm just saying that. Okay. Trust me, I've had this happen at a recent shooting event with my hand loads out at 800 yards with my AR. No go for me with that bullet and that velocity. 68 grain SMK. What's SMK? Soft? No, I don't know. But he says it was going at 28,000 feet per second.
Okay.
No, doesn't he? Doesn't it say 28,000 right
that's
there?
That's what it says, yes.
Yeah, it does say 28,000.
That's quite a gun he has.
That is fast, Brian.
Yes.
I think he meant 2,800.
Is that like one of those laser guns?
That'd be way faster than that. 186,000 miles per second. The laser gun. These definitely went subsonic, and I even missed the backstop, rounds impacting in front of the target and such. 600 yards, no problem. 800, no go at all. So, yeah, I could see how some projectiles, especially the longer ones, long, skinny ones, when they go through that transonic shift, that transonic shockwave, they would be subject to that buffeting, and all of a sudden, they're now experiencing a lot more wind resistance, and they will start to go off, you know, off target. So, yeah, That happens. Not with all bullets, though, but some. Okay, so I hope we don't have that sorted out yet because I want another email from him. He continues on. Random Ontario Dave had no problem with the rounds he was using that day at 800 yards, though. Out of his 16-inch barrel, his stayed supersonic, and he had no issues with accuracy. What remains as an effective round for engaging game or enemy soldiers at a given range is completely different than one can accurately hit a target. We are talking about having enough terminal ballistics to punch a hole in paper, not put down a deer or bad guy. Sharp 97 specifically stated that he or she, it's a he, was looking at long range target rifles, not long range hunting or fighting rifles. Okay, so that's a good point.
Right.
As long as it goes through paper, it's just fine. Okay. The maximum effective range...
I don't think anyone was arguing... I don't think any of us were saying that...
No, I think we sort of did mention that after 600 yards, it wasn't really effective anymore. And I was, at that point, when I said that, I was referring to terminal ballistics on, like, a deer or some sort of animal target. So...
Right.
I didn't even... all he has to do is poke a hole in paper.
Right.
So... All right. The maximum effective range of a military rifle in 5.56, which is a 62 grain projectile going at 3,100 feet per second with a 3x optic, is limited by terminal ballistics. A bolt action rifle with 10 to 15 times magnification chambered in 223 with a fast twist barrel shooting 75 to 90 grain bullets at paper is a completely different animal for a different purpose. I think we covered that point already. Okay, yep. So continue on. Yes, the 308 will generally have somewhat longer range than the 223. It will fight the wind somewhat better and long ranges, 900 to 1,000 yards plus, but a 223 will generally keep up with it out to that distance as long as the right bullets are chosen. The right bullets have to be chosen for the 308 as well. The 223 has a major advantage of lower cost to load, cheaper bullets, less powder, a stiffer barrel in the same profile, a 223 bore versus a 308 bore, and a great deal less recoil. Some shooters can watch their own bullet trace through the air through their rifle scope in 223. 308 kicks too much for this. We have covered some or all of this on Modern Rifleman Radio on various episodes. You guys
shameless plug
once in a while. Cheer, shoot straight, shoot straight, shoot oft in the Conquistador, also known as the Greasy Civilian. P.S. Your guest, Robert Fortier, is, well, he's not on this week, but we will have him, is an F-class shooter and probably has better input than me. I'd be curious to hear from someone who actually shoots this discipline. Yeah, maybe we can talk to Robert about that whenever we finally get him on. So I think what we ended up saying in the end was he should go with a 308 because it's better at 1,000 yards. That's what we ended up saying, right?
Yes.
And that's what Brian says in his last paragraph here.
Yes.
That it'll fight the wind better and longer ranges at 900. So we gave him the right answer.
Yes.
Right. So maybe we came about it the wrong way, but.
Yeah. And if that's what he needs at 1,000 yards, having said that, I was talking to someone this week who has not had any issues with whacking steel at 850 with his AR.
Sure.
You know, so again, if you're talking about just target shooting, I mean, it's certainly capable out there.
Well, I'd be curious to see how many F-class shooters shoot 223 versus 308.
Mm.
And I wonder if I would, I don't know. I think traditionally, for me anyway, what I've always known to be true, quote unquote known, because apparently I've been wrong, is that 308 is the go-to cartridge for long range target shooting. Like, that's just what I've always thought, that 308 was inherently accurate. It was a great long range shooter. And so that's why I went that route. And 223, having half the projectile weight, is going to be pushed around by the wind that much more. You know, it's just, I just wouldn't think that it would be nearly as good as a long range shooter, but maybe it is. Maybe it is just great for shooting targets out to 1,000 yards as long as they're just paper. Maybe it's just as accurate. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and I think if you're interested in really getting into the science of it, getting pushed around by the wind is not that big of it. Is not as much of an issue. I shouldn't say that. It is an issue, but you can compensate for those things if you really want the challenge and want to get good at it. You know, you can. For that distance, you pretty much got to do that anyway, even with the 308. Start calculating your wind and things like that. So.
Yeah, an interesting thing that I discovered couple years ago now, actually, is that shooting a 22 at 300 yards has the same external ballistics as a 308 as 1,000 yards. So if you can shoot, so if you want the challenge of shooting 1,000 yards but you don't have the money, you can just get a 22 and shoot a 300 yards. And you have the same holdover, the same effect of wind will occur on the bullet. Everything's the same. So you can almost, it's almost like a mini, like you can train for it that way. You can train shooting 1,000 yards with your 22 and then go to 1,000 yards with a 308 and your holdovers will be very similar. Your wind will be very similar. So something to consider for those people who want to maybe give it a try, see how hard it really is without, you know, putting a whole lot of money into it. Just go 300 yards and with your 22 and just see what it's like. I've done it personally. I can tell you that it's not easy, but it is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to start moving. I mean, I've never been what I would consider a precision shooter, and I don't even really have a precision gun, but I would at some point like to get into the science of that and learn how to do it, as successfully as I can with that M305. And I don't know if I'll be able to push it out to 1,000, but
I think with the groups you were getting at 100 there, I mean, if it's shooting sub MOA, I think you would have no problem getting out to 1,000 with it. You'll have to get a different scope and a different mount, probably.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But, you know,
I talked to someone today who has a similar gun as one of the very first ones that come out and, that came to Canada, and he has a very nice setup. He's put a lot of money into it as far as, you know, the trigger and the, stock and, you know, the whole, like that he's got a $2,000 scope on it, you know, just really, really high end with everything on it. And he's not like, he's a 100-yard target. He set up, boom, first two shots he ever made in that target, calculating he even calculated barometric pressure and you know, like way over the top, you know?
Yeah.
And he had two shots 6 inches apart, dead center on a 3x3 target he had set up. So, you know, I think the gun is certainly capable of it. He, you know, he has no problem. That was at 800. So to shoot Minute of Man or whatever you want to call it at 1,000, you know, to be able to, you know, hit a 2 or 3 foot target, I think you should certainly be capable.
I mean, if the gun is capable, if the, well, like Brian says, if the bullet stays supersonic all the way out there,
Yeah.
And so it's flying true and you are able to compensate for wind and all the other variables.
Yeah.
You know, if it's sub MOA, you should be able to hit a 10 inch target.
Yeah. And then really it's a matter of eliminating things like, ammunition, you know, variables.
That's it. Yep.
He said he loaded everything. He weighed his bullets to the gram. He weighed his casings. He was using a pair of tweezers to measure the grains of powder. Like,
No, when you get out to those distances, I mean, every little variable, it multiplies, right?
Yeah.
You know, one MOA at 100 is 1 inch. At that one MOA at 1,000 yards is 10 inches. So that just gives you an idea that everything extrapolates like largely. So if you have, you know, a 10 foot per second deviation in your speed between your projectiles, well, that's going to account for a large difference in drop once you get out to 1,000 yards between the one shooting regular, you know, your nominal speed and one 10 feet per second less. Like, everything's got to be just as consistent as you can possibly get it.
That's right. Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of science, a lot of art, a lot of time and technique that goes into long range precision shooting. And it's something that fascinates me and something that I'd like to get into more as well. But the farther out you get, as I understand it, the more expensive it becomes, the more time and money you have to put into it in order to get the results that you're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely. But he said he was getting half inch MOA out of his gun. So
half inch at 100. So half MOA.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very, very accurate.
That was 10 shots.
Wow. That's a good shooter. See, three, as it was explained to me once, 3 shots tests the bullet, 5 shots tests the rifle, and 10 shots tests the shooter. So, you know, you put 3 shots nice and close together, well, you got some good ammo there. You put 5 shots close together, now you've got a pretty good rifle.
Yep.
Put 10 shots all close together, now you've got a good shooter. So you've got all three.
Oh, he's a good shooter. He didn't pull the last couple, but his barrel was starting to heat up after 10 shots and with the 308. And so he found that the last two, he didn't really count them because he knew it was the barrel heating up because of that many shots in a row.
And that's one more variable that you have to account for is, you know, your barrel heating up. And that might be a reason why you might want to go with 223 because you're going to heat your barrel up that much less. It's going to have, I still think that 308's the way to go, personally. But, you know, if you want to go 223, Brian seems to think that you're perfectly capable of doing it with 223, so that's good. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to really getting into some precision loads with a 308. And, I mean, I've got some money to invest in a scope and stuff before I can really worry too much about the ammo, But then I'm just a single stage load and really be crazy precise about the bullet weight and the casing and really be fastidious.
Yeah, that's what I do with my 223 whenever I reload for the Axis is, and it's kind of funny to reload with that much precision for a $300 gun.
Yeah.
But it shows, it works. I mean, it's an extremely accurate load and extremely accurate rifle. I don't think I could put 10 in under an inch at 100 yards. I don't think I'm the shooter for that. But the gun is certainly capable, I think, and so is the load that I've developed. And you're right. I mean, every single time, like I'll make hunting ammo, I'll make plinking ammo, and then I'll make target ammo. And when I make target ammo, you know, it takes me 10 minutes around sometimes because I go through I weigh the cases, I trim them, weigh the projectiles. You know, you're weighing the powder very precisely. Like, everything is the crimping is all exactly the same. The overall length is exactly the same. Everything's got to be exactly the same. And if I screw something up, well, it goes over into the plinking ammo and I start again.
Yeah. Now I have a question. What's the reason for weighing the casing?
Because the internal capacity for holding the powder. So if you know,
how do you adjust that?
Oh, you don't.
You just pick out the ones that are all the same.
Yeah, I'll weigh, you know, 20 or 30 cases, and then all the ones that weigh X, I put together. All the ones that weigh Y, I put together. And I try to get at least 5 that weigh exactly the same. And those 5, I will shoot at the same target. The next 5, I will shoot at a different target. That way I know that, you know, at least for this target, every variable that I can possibly cover is good with these 5 bullets.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you. Conquistador, Brian. Yeah. Brian, yeah. Lots of stuff to talk about there. And, you know, this is an extremely complex topic. There are so many variables, so many things that you can talk about when you're talking long-range precision shooting. And we were just giving a vanilla answer, just a general blanket term, kind of like, go 308 is the best, kind of, let's not talk about all the minutia. But you're right, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. So thank you for bringing a lot of that to our attention and giving us a chance to talk about it. You should come on and talk to us about it sometime, and then we'll have Robert on, and maybe Robert will tell you how wrong you are. How you like it. Cool. All right. So this next one from Thomas. It is your turn, I believe.
Okay. Thomas says, condensation is your gun's worst enemy, not just the optics. You should never take a cold gun into a warm environment. Leave your gun in its case and allow it to slowly come to room temperature over 12 to 18 hour period. I usually have my gun cases on the basement floor and unpack them for the next day. If you have to uncase a frozen gun, saturate it inside and out with WD-40. Don't do that. This will displace any moisture from condensation. Remember to remove all the WD-40 and relube before using the gun again, since this product will also remove the lubricant from your gun, too. That is true.
That is true. It will remove all the lube and all the condensation. That's great. What you got to be so careful with WD-40 is that it will ruin finishes.
Yes.
It'll take the finish off of your wood stock. It will melt plastic, as Curtis discovered, a friend of mine up here with his gun. Decided to use some WD-40 and melted the plastic on on the trigger guard. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's something that will eat things and damage things. So I wouldn't recommend the WD-40. Everything else is absolutely correct. You know, condensation is, you know, you don't want your guns to get wet. And condensation is wet. So I would recommend just getting a light cleaning oil, you know, something in a can, something like WD-40, but something designed specifically for firearms. And then you can, you know, hose it down with that and then wipe it off. So,
I think if you're very careful, the WD-40 could work. And if you're, you know, make sure you get it off and not leave it in the firearm.
Sure.
As well, because...
Yeah, you're probably right, but I think it's probably better to just say don't use WD-40, use something else. Because then you don't.
I'm trying to make Thomas feel better here with his suggestion. Come on.
No, Thomas, look, not everybody knows. I mean, WD-40 stands for water displacement. The WD is water displacement, and that's exactly what it does and why it exists, just not for firearms. Everything else is great, but I just think guns are worth more than a can of WD-40. You should do something that's designed for guns on your gun, personally. But, I mean, everything else is right. I don't know why I forgot to mention that your guns are something to worry about, too, when you bring them in from the cold. I guess I just figured if you're taking care of your optic, which is attached to your gun, then your gun would automatically be taken care of, too. Yeah. But, anyway.
Yeah. I never worry too much about it. I don't know why that is, but I don't hunt a lot when it's really cold, either, or you know, use my firearms when it's really cold.
Right.
I guess. The ARs and stuff in there, usually pretty oily and greasy inside, and the condensation just doesn't happen.
Well, that's the thing, eh? Whenever you have something that we run as wet as we do, the ARs and our other competition firearms, I mean, we run them with a lot of lube in them. And so when they come back from the range, even if they are cold soaked, they come in and get all sweaty from the condensation. It's really not going to affect them because they're already coated in a thick covering of oil or grease or something. But not all guns are like that. So it is something that I do bear in mind whenever I come in from a cold day of hunting. You know, whether it's my shotgun or 22 or whatever, I'll leave it in the case and let it warm up. And then when I take it out, I always inspect it. I always make sure that it doesn't have any water on it before I put it away because I don't want it to rust, and it will. So.
Yep.
Yep. Cool. Well, thank you, Thomas. Excellent suggestions with that one little tweak.
Caveat.
Yes, there we go. All right.
No, you have to say it with an English accent. Caveat.
The caveat.
There's one caveat to your suggestion, Thomas.
Isn't like, All right. Never mind. Okay, so from Spencer is the next one. He says, sorry, Matt, you make a terrible grammar Nazi. Look, my grammar is fine. It's just I can't pronounce things right. If you want to write it down, I can edit the crap out of your stuff and make it right. But I can't speak worth a darn, apparently, because he says, I mean, condensating? Really? I thought you lived in the part of Canada where they speak English. Anyway, no more grammar for you. Actually, he writes anyways.
He doesn't, actually. That's the funny thing is you don't.
No. This part of Canada, we don't speak anything. I live in a French community. I don't know how to speak English. He goes, anyways, and actually he put an S on the end of anyways, which is incorrect if you look it up. So anyways, he says, no more grammar for you. Spencer, from a place I can both spell and pronounce correctly. Yes, from Smyrna, Georgia. So thank you, Spencer, for making fun of me yet again. That is great. You kick me while I'm down. It's cool. I'm just going to go cry. It's just tears condensating on my cheeks.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, it's condensing. I know. I just was speaking too quickly last week. Leave me alone. I'm kidding. Don't leave me alone. Send me more email. I love it. Next one's from Luke. Unless you had something to say to Spencer.
Nope. I will get this. I just had to turn off the ringing phone in the background here.
Yeah. Probably just Trevor yelling at us for screwing up the show again this week.
Yeah. Okay, this next one comes from Luke, who says, hey guys, this is Luke Giroux. Hey guys, in last week's show, episode 86, you mentioned restrictions about how many firearms one can carry while out hunting, but didn't say what the rules were in NB. Now, that is New Brunswick. Can you answer that for New Brunswick and point out where you found the information? I tend to carry a copy of the Hunt Trap booklet when I'm out in case something comes into question, but I don't recall ever seeing this in the booklet, which leads me to believe in New Brunswick there are no restrictions.
I was going to look this up, and then I didn't because I forgot, and I'm a bad, bad host.
I don't actually remember us saying that there were restrictions for New Brunswick.
No, we didn't. We didn't mention it at all.
I think we said be aware of that because it's a possibility, but we don't know.
Yeah, I don't think he's criticizing us. He's just saying you mentioned that there were some restrictions in some provinces, but you didn't talk about what they are in New Brunswick. Well, I think it's because I don't know what they are, and I don't think there are any. I think you can hunt with as many guns as you'd like to. As long as they're all the falling within the caliber restrictions of the game that you're hunting, I don't think there's an issue, but don't take my word for it. I'm not a lawyer or an expert in hunting regulations in New Brunswick, so I don't know. I can tell you, and I hope I'm not wrong, but I can tell you what I do when I go hunting, I will often drive to where I'm hunting, and in my truck, even if it's just me, I usually have at least two firearms. I have a shotgun and a .22. And when I get to where I'm hunting, I decide which gun to take with me. I don't carry them both with me out in the woods.
Yes.
I suppose I could, maybe. I don't know if I could or not, but.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, it wouldn't normally, it's kind of an unusual thing because most people don't carry more than one firearm when they're hunting. I mean, you just carry one. So it is kind of an interesting, different problem that wouldn't come up every day for most hunters.
Yeah, sometimes I do carry two because I sometimes carry my pellet gun with me. It's a pistol in a holster on my belt as I'm out hunting. And I do have on my phone an email from the Ministry of Natural Resources that states that this is legal in case I do run into a conservation officer, because I've had several of them tell me that, it's not legal until I show them the email. I say, well, what about this? Oh, like, never heard of that before, they often say. But sometimes I do carry two, and so I don't know, I don't think I'm in the wrong. I don't ever remember seeing
There's certainly nothing in that Hunt and Trap book.
That's right.
That I know of. And maybe where I, cause I think it was me that suggested that. I'm wondering if it's a waterfowl. I wonder if it's a federal waterfowl rule.
Maybe.
That was the context that the question was asked.
Well, that's the thing is whenever you are hunting a specific game animal and you have on you the possession, in possession, a firearm that's not legal for that hunt, if you are actively hunting them and you have that with you, you're going to be, even if it's a secondary firearm, they're still going to say, well, you're hunting it with that. Yep. That's just what they'll do. I mean, that's how it was explained to me when I was in Ontario about the turkeys.
Yes.
You were only allowed to carry this specific ammunition. And if you have more with you, even if it's not for hunting, maybe it's for the next day or it's left over from yesterday's, they're still going to charge you with hunting with the wrong ammo because that's what they do. But I think if you want to have two shotguns while you're out goose hunting though, and they both have the same ammo, I don't see a problem with that. Yeah. But again,
I don't know about that. I have in the back of my head that that's not allowed. but I don't know where I've read that.
Oh, and that might be because you're only allowed to have three in the gun, right? And so maybe some people would think, oh, well, let's carry two guns. That way I get six right away. And so that might be one of the reasons why they would have that for the waterfowl.
Yeah. But yeah, I will, Luke, do my best to try and find some information and try and, you know, talk to some people I know and see if I heard that from someone else or where I got that. So
yeah. Remember that the hunt and trap booklet that they hand out is not the law.
Yeah, it's just a summarization.
It's a summarization, and yeah, it. If you read the actual law is available online, so you can go online and look it up, I guess. But I don't have a link for you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I don't either. But and I think anytime there are changes and things like that, they try to put it in that book because that's pretty much the only thing anybody reads.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Next one comes to us from Adam Lund, and he says, "My vote has two dings on it already." Oh, he's talking about votes for where we should send the money we raised last year. He says, "I didn't donate, and I live in the States. Although my state is often referred to as South Canada." So I wonder if that's like Montana or something.
Okay.
Unless he's down in Florida, because sometimes they call Florida.
Yeah, so many Canadians go down there.
Yeah, I don't know. So I wonder where he's from. He goes, how do you think about donating the money to benefit the soldiers killed in the terrorist attacks recently committed? So perhaps. And then he goes on to say, he loved the winter talk. My only complaint was all the Celsius talk. A Southern folk only understand Fahrenheit. I had to Google for a converter. Shoot straight and protect your nuts. I'm Ron Burgundy, says Adam. If Trevor was here, he'd say, no, you're not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry about that. We usually speak in Celsius because it makes sense.
It's kind of interesting that we would speak in Celsius and then talk about feet in inches and yards.
It is funny, eh? Because in shooting, you know, feet and yards are usually, you know, what people shoot in. I mean, yeah, I know there's the MilDot system, which is all metric, but most people are brought up shooting feet and inches and using feet and inches. But this next thing is an audio submission from Jason Philp. So let's
Jason,
play that now.
Dear Slamfire Radio hosts, Matt, Owen, and sometimes Trevor, I think it'd be this time that I would ask you to contribute heavily, heartily, and possibly use all the charity money you've raised for the last charity shoot to support the campaign for Thomas Mulcair for Prime Minister. Publicly, he stated that the obligation to register your gun is no different than the obligation to register your dog or your car. I think that is a great plan, because where I live, unless I'm driving on a public road, I don't need to register any vehicle that I have on my private land, and I certainly don't need to register any dog I have. It's part of the freedom of living in Alberta, and I think Thomas Mulcair finally gets it. If I don't have any more obligation, fantastic. Private land, private gun, Prime Minister. Thanks, Thomas Mulcair. Definitely not Jason Philp, calling in from Alberta, the land of the free.
All right, well, thank you, Jason, for sending that in. Tom Mulcair for Prime Minister. Woo, you got me. Yeah, it was pretty good, though. Thanks for sending. And anybody else who ever wants to send in an audio submission, please feel free. We love getting them. Yeah, they're easy to do. I mean, most phones will just let you, you know, make a recording on your phone, and you can just email it to us. So it works great. Don't worry about, if you screw it up halfway through, just do it again, or send it in with a screw up, because that'll become our outtakes. Make fun of you.
Yes, and the only real other thing that should be added to that is don't do it while, you know, riding a motorcycle or running a chainsaw or
driving down the road in your big half-ton truck down a dirt road like Jason Philp does.
Yes, while, you know, diesel with the windows down,
right.
You know,
it just... Yeah, make sure it's good audio quality.
A little bit of decent audio quality is good, but it's maybe quiet.
Yeah. So cool. So the only other thing I want to add to the listener feedback section is send us an email. Slamfireradio@gmail.com. We love getting your feedback and gives us something to talk about. And, you know, you feel free to criticize just like Brian Bolivar does, because
call him a critic. He's a podcast critic.
He's a podcast critic. As well as Spencer, as well as Jason Philp. I mean, pretty much everybody criticized us
this
week.
But some of that was just Matthew critic.
Go ahead and criticize. It's cool. I'm fine with that.
Yes.
Can't be right all the time.
Well, that's right.
Look at that. I was right about something. Finally.
I am right that I am wrong.
Huh. So in that, I am right. I'll twist it around yet.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. Oh, wait, shout outs. Do we have any shout outs?
I have a shout out.
Yeah, go.
I have a shout out to a gentleman who I met this week online, on the NFA Facebook page, actually.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, named, Jason. I'm going to use his last name. I hope he doesn't mind. Doring, I believe it's pronounced.
So even if he does mind, doesn't matter because you probably said it wrong.
It probably, yes. Yeah. Jason, send an email. Tell me how to pronounce your last name.
Criticize Owen.
Yeah, pretty sure it's Doring. Doring, I think, is probably
sure.
How it's, but anyway, yeah, cool guy. Not a listener. Didn't know about the show.
And so good thing you're sending him a shout out because he doesn't listen.
He doesn't listen. Well, he said he was going to check it out, so hopefully he does. He was asking about my M305 build and the accuracy of it because he's thinking about it, and he's actually the gentleman who was shooting his AR out to 850 yards and hitting steel at 850. So
cool.
Yeah, so that was kind of neat. So I might even give that a try with my AR someday. We'll see if I can get to a range that has that kind of distance around here.
I think Springfield has a range out to 1,000, doesn't it?
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
So gotta find a big gong.
Yeah.
Put a big 10-foot gong out there. I'll hit it with my AR too. Standing up.
Yeah. No, when I told him about the show, and he said, "Oh, I'll check that out." So I said, "Well, I'll give you a shout out on the show next week." So there it is.
There it is.
Thank you for listening, Jason. Hopefully you're not completely not scared away by this point in the show.
Cool. All right. Well, be sure to check out both of our National Firearms Associations. We have the CSSA and the NFA. That's the Canadian Sport Shooting Association, or Shooting Sport Association, and the National Firearms Association. They both are our advocates for firearm privileges and what should be firearm rights here in Canada. It is very important that you support them. You should become a member. If you do become a member, please write us in. Let us know that you have, because we will celebrate with you. It's a good thing. You're doing something to help promote our sport and the future of it and the ability for it to last, you know, into the next generation, which is what we needed to be able to do. We have a federal election coming up, and, you know, you never know which way the vote's going to go. And if, you know, one of our left-wing parties gets in, they could do a lot of damage in a short amount of time. So it's very important that we have these firearms associations on our side to kind of help make sure they don't go too crazy in the sorts of things that they suggest and then turn into law. So, I strongly urge you, go support them, sign up. Also, check us out on the Gun Owners of Canada web forum. It's a cool place to go hang out, talk about guns. We have our own little forum there where sometimes people post questions and comments, and used to usually just double up buck, but yeah, other people do too sometimes, which is cool. So check us out over there. And even if you don't go there to check us out, go over there and check out all the other cool forums. They've got dedicated forums on just about any type of shooting discipline you can imagine. And you can talk about just about whatever you like, and people are there. They're very friendly. They're very helpful. They answer your questions without making fun of you. So go check it out. Also, please go check us out on Facebook. We are at 1,088 likes, and that's our mission, is to reach 1,090, I guess, which is two away. Also, please be sure to check out all the other great shows on the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network. That's renoviolaoutdoors.com. They got lots of really cool outdoor shows, so if you like being outside, you should check them out. You can hear this show on Friday at 1 and 10 p.m. and on Mondays at 1 a.m. because what else do you have to do at 1 a.m. on Monday? I think we make that joke every week, and it never gets old. Also, check out the Crusader Podcast Network at crusaderpodcast.com. It is the first international pro-gun podcast network. All the shows there are dedicated to protecting our rights as gun owners. Doesn't matter what side of the border we live on, we're all in this together. So that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening. Stay safe. Hug your guns.
So long for now.
So long for now.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.